Verulam Sports.
So we are just hours away from the 2020 FA Cup final. Arsenal and Chelsea are soon to battle it out at Wembley for the coveted prize. And this season has been full of strange and wonderful surprises, but also some negative ones as well. But Chelsea being in the FA Cup final, it's consistent with their story. It's consistent with their quality this season and the fact that they do love an FA Cup final. However, here to discuss the blue side of the London Derby final, I'm chatting to Dan from the London is Blue podcast. Now, before we get into it all, how have you been, Dan? And has Chelsea's quality lifted your spirits across the pond?
Yeah, it's been a really fantastic season. You know, I think when we looked back on it and we talked about it, you and I had a chance to chat before the season started about what we might expect from this season, a top four finish, Lampard vying for some type of trophy, and it's come to fruition. And on top of that, you've had great youngsters make their way into the squad. You have Mason Mount playing almost every minute that he could. You have Christian Pulisic, who many people thought was going to be this commercial signing, who ended up becoming a key individual in the post-restart situation. And then you have a former gunner himself in Olivier Giroud helping to push Chelsea across the line into a top four finish and into this FA Cup final. So all in all, it's again, this is the chaotic Chelsea that supporters of the club are accustomed to and love and embrace. And this season was no different.
I love that you mentioned as well that Olly Giroud has helped you across the line there as well. It's just a little bit of pain in my heart before we've even started here. But as an Arsenal fan, I'm quite shocked that we are in the cup final. And I think some people are as well, especially with Emery Ball. But as the season has gone on, I will admit, you know, again, it pains me a little bit, but Chelsea have adapted and they're looking to love that Lampard style now. But was it a shock to you to see yourself at Wembley once again? Or do you think it's kind of deserved from the fruits of what you've achieved this season?
Well, when we look at the run-in, and you have to face Leicester, when you have to face Man United, when you have to face Liverpool, we didn't get an easy draw in any capacity for this run-in. And so I think, to me, it's a deserved final opportunity. I think what also didn't happen is Lampard didn't take it easy on these cup games. As much as he talked about making sure he finished top four and the value of doing so, he definitely had his eye on trying to make it far in a single cup competition this season. Obviously, we didn't get to where we wanted to with the League Cup. And it looks like, unless there's a massive rebound in the 3-0 deficit to Byron, is pretty insurmountable, but we've done stranger things. It would be nice to see Lampard and Chelsea win trophy here. And it is, you know, they have done it through winning hard games. So at the same point, you know, Arsenal had to beat Man City in its last game here to get to the final and did so in a pretty convincing fashion. So I don't think we're getting, and we haven't gotten any easy draw in this competition, and this final draw is not easy either.
Yeah, and I'd totally have to agree with you here because it hasn't been easy at all when you look at the lineup. But I'm going to bring it back to a bit of FA Cup nostalgia because, you know, always around these finals, we bring back some good goals, some great moments in history. And, you know, Chelsea have many, many. I mean, we just have to remind people that 2009 to 2013, they actually have the longest unbeaten run of 29 consecutive games without a defeat. So I just want to talk through some of these moments. Now, since 2007, Chelsea have 5 FA Cup wins, but I'm going to ask you, Dan, maybe to delve into your memories here, but what is your first memories, and maybe positive or negative ones, of Chelsea in this tournament?
You know, if I think back to it, you know, and this is the challenge of being, I think, a little bit of an American supporter, is when you get started into supporting Chelsea, and, you know, Balak was the one who really brought me into watching and following Chelsea. I didn't see many of the wins that we had, and, you know, kind of the final wins much earlier, right? Like when we, you know, when you think back to it, you know, the 2099 against Villa, you kind of go back and against Middlesbrough in the, you know, mid 90s. So there was stuff that happened prior to that, but I really like the, you know, the Everton and Portsmouth wins, 08 and 09 would probably be kind of some of the first memories there. And then I think the most recent ones, you know, looking at the win against United in the 17-18 season, which kind of capped off the end of the Antonio Conte era at Chelsea, was a nice way for that story or that saga to end. So, you know, I think you're right in that Chelsea have a pretty storied history. I mean, you know, Arsenal obviously have the most FA Cup wins in kind of the history of the competition, but Chelsea would definitely like to, in this scenario, end up making it just a little bit smaller of a gap between the two.
Well, they've met two times in the FA Cup previously as well, and it's been two wins for Arsenal. But, you know, it could be a big, big win there. Now, there's been many kind of discussions about FA Cup songs. Arsenal have obviously got the classic She Wore a Yellow Ribbon. But I do have to ask you, have you been playing Suggs' 1997 Blue Day in the build-up for this FA Cup final?
I haven't, but it probably will be on my, I tend to do a, you know, just with the time difference in the US here, I tend to do a run before most matches because I can get in my morning run. Then I can kind of check the lineups and then I can kind of get into the Twitter chat and banter back and forth pre-match. So that will be on there. Maybe One Step Beyond will be on there to kind of hopefully thinking about what happens at the end of it all. So
yeah, hopefully the Suggs tune there, you know, of One Step Beyond, building into next season as well, because you've got a lot to look forward to in terms of signings. But you are based in the USA, as you've mentioned here, and you do get to come to Chelsea games fairly often. But how have you ever been to an FA Cup final? And do you have a favourite of the Chelseas? I know you said that you've not seen too many, but is there a single one that kind of stands out for you?
Well, so the only FA Cup match that I have been able to make it to in person was actually not this season, but the previous season under Mauricio Sarri, and it was the 2-0 victory over Nottingham Forest with two Alvaro Morata goals and two assists from Callum Hudson-Odoi in one of the weirdest times in Chelsea history, where we also, that same week, had a 0-0 draw versus Southampton. And so that was that FA Cup match was definitely the highlight of that week and a half of being in London. If I think about it, actually, though, what's been really nice is we think about this is the iconic 50th anniversary of the 1970 Chelsea victory in the FA Cup. And so what's been nice is actually to kind of go back and watch and absorb that part of Chelsea history. And I think if that actually ends up becoming, you know, really ends up becoming a favorite for a couple of reasons, you know, in addition to the fact that Leeds are coming up to the Premier League again, Dirty Leeds will be back and we might have a chance to beat them two times next season. And, you know, with Bielsa there, it's going to be another bit of a hotly contested, challenging match to go into.
I like the mention of Dirty Leeds there. That's going to be one that's peddled all through next season. We'll see if they continue to be that. But in terms of FA Cup goals then, we've seen many across the years. Gerrard is probably synonymous with the most iconic FA Cup goal. But is there a Chelsea one that really stands out to you?
Chelsea goal in the FA Cup. I think the Matic goal past Tottenham, where he had that just like 30-yard banger from outside the box, was one that just sits in my memory. I mean, it wasn't obviously a final, but it put us into the final. But it was a great semifinal victory, and it was definitely a wonder goal. It was not the type of thing you expect from Nemanja Matic to just kind of uncork that from his wheelhouse, but it was one that, you know, just the Zuma reaction on the sidelines of kind of freaking out, like, oh my gosh, that just happened. The bench going crazy. That's one that, you know, really kind of sits out in my mind.
Matic is a weird kind of player because, you know, as a defensive mid, you don't expect that from him, but he does seem to have that in the locker. I was going to ask as well, do you think the Drogba one, where it was a little bit of a team goal against Manchester United, that was a sumptuous finish over the goalkeeper as well. That has to be up there in terms of one of your favourites as well.
Yeah, I'd love to, since we're playing Arsenal, just bring Drogba back on a one-game contract. Even though Giroud has been in fantastic form, if there's one person who over the years gave Arsenal fans a bit of a night terrors and hot flashes, it was seeing Drogba on the team sheet and knowing that he was most likely going to score against Arsenal. So, yeah, any goal from Drogba definitely ranks up there in competitions. And, you know, his highlight reel is maybe second to none. I think there's very few strikers in the Premier League era, the FA Cup era, who have done as much damage as he has in that competition.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm sweating because my room's really hot or it's because you said the D word of Didier Drogba. it's bringing back terrible, terrible memories of how he's dominated us. And it may inform the next answer for you here, but a nostalgic question here. Which Chelsea player do you think of most when we talk about the FA Cup, especially FA Cup finals?
Yeah, Drogba is the one for me. If I was a fan maybe of a different generation, a different name might come up to the top of my mind. But Drogba is the one, I would say, in most recent memory, who has done more in those matches to make sure that Chelsea lifts some silverware, which is, again, something that we pride ourselves on doing, something that Arsenal prides themselves on doing, and something that Tottenham just doesn't seem to care to do. So at least we can agree that the two clubs from London that are in this competition this time do have a vested interest in trying to fill out a trophy cabinet and not just collect DVD accolades.
I love that so much. You know, you call it the London is Blue podcast. We'd say maybe Red is a little bit behind at the moment because you have done better than us. But way, way, way behind there is the team in white. That London is not at all lily white. But I was going to ask as well, you know, you haven't mentioned what us Arsenal fans would call the C word, Ashley Cole. I mean, he was Mr. FA Cup in terms of the most wins of all players of all time in the FA Cup. Why haven't you mentioned him?
That's a good question. I would say I already came on the podcast initially and mentioned Giroud quite early and figured that he was going to cause some damage this weekend and didn't want to bring up too many bad memories. it's funny that Ashley Cole sometimes has to be reminded that he played for Arsenal in interviews in the more recent era. I don't know if that's a sign of aging or a sign of preference, or maybe the fact that, you know, he's now where he is within his career. But yeah, it's funny to, when you look at the fact that Chelsea and Arsenal have shared so many pivotal players in each other's histories. You know, we've shared Cesc Fabregas, we've shared David Luiz now, maybe one up sharing Willian, depending upon how this summer transfer season ends up. And like, that's adds just another unique flavor to it that this competition has, because it's, you know, brothers have swapped sides, you know, it's the team across town, and ultimately it's a bit of a fun and bitter and agonizing mixture of emotions that quell up inside you for this type of event.
Maybe in terms of if we were dipping in to Chelsea's history there as well, of shared ownership, I'd probably plumb for Diego Costa, maybe for that one game. So it'd be Drogba versus Costa. I think that would be a mighty, mighty battle there of players, I would say, very versed in the dark art. But let's move on to your journey to the final, because as you said there, it has been a tough one. Current champions Liverpool, third place Man United, and Leicester were some of the teams that stood in your way. And what I thought was a little bit spooky there as well was this season you started off with a 2-0 win over Nottingham Forest, which was your previous viewing of an FA Cup game, you know, under Sarri. So I suppose starting off with that game, do you think there was an improvement from Chelsea in that 2-0 win under Sarri ball? I think I know the answer, but talk us through what has changed from last season to this one.
Well, we concede a lot more goals. That is the biggest storyline. you know, a lot of things changed. We are less reliant on an individual player to pull out moments of magic. When we think about what happened last season and many of the seasons prior, when we got into trouble or we went down a goal, it was essentially up to pressing one button to try to solve the problem. That was, can we press the Eden Hazard button to squeak out a result, to get a draw out of a loss or get a win out of a draw? And more often than not, it paid many, many dividends for us. And so this season, with no Eden Hazard, with a unproven Premier League striker in Tammy Abraham, with trying to adapt to a new system, with a goalkeeper that was really kind of in a regression over previous season, I think in a lot of cases felt like the deck was stacked against us. And you know, it was nice to see, at least in the early rounds, we did get a little bit of rotation from some of our younger players in there. We think about players like Fikayo Tomori was able to get some opportunity to play earlier. But in general, it definitely has been a style that is more catered to a very heavy press, not just holding possession. You know, when you kind of look at the first 15 minutes usually of each half, Chelsea are very much, you know, a very, very high press, are trying to play. They're trying to play the actual player instead of just playing the ball, which was the Mauricio Sarri style. You play the ball in the passing lane. You're not necessarily playing the individual man. Frank is having them play the man and really pressing extremely high and in periods of high intensity. It almost is, I think, a little bit more familiar to me of the way Tottenham played a couple seasons ago under Pochettino, where you would see just this blitz of activity and high press and stress to kind of try to force a crack early on, get the initial goal, and then move into a little bit more of a, okay, now we're going to control the game, be a little bit more cautious. I also think Frank isn't as cautious throughout the majority of the matches either, and is willing to just let them continue going at it. There have been times where in the dying moments of a close match, we're still pressing, or we haven't progressed to the art of tactful mismanagement of time to wind down the clock, and that only has started to showcase itself in the end of the season here. So hopefully, if we are ahead in this match, we do a good job of winding down that clock versus, you know, putting the foot on the gas pedal.
I think that is the hallmark of Lampard. You know, the wonderful thing about him is he is pursuing beautiful, entertaining football. And the problem with Sarri sometimes was he wasn't pragmatic enough. He wouldn't change it too much. So I definitely see that. Now, focusing just on the FA Cup for a moment, yeah, there is 3 clean sheets. You've only conceded 2 goals and plenty of goals scored as well. Do you think that maybe Chelsea's best performances have been saved for the FA Cup this season?
Some of the I do think the win over United was probably is up for contention of the best game that Chelsea played all season. And I would say the only other matches that probably are in that same category would be the wins over Tottenham this season, being able to do a double over Mourinho, the first time I think in, you know, league history for anyone going up against Mourinho. Frank Lampard is the student becomes the master and is able to vanquish his former manager in a new type of combat. But I would say that the results that we were able to work out, you know, we had trouble with Leicester over the course of the season in the Premier League, but we were able to beat them in the FA Cup. We, you know, ended up beating Liverpool in the FA Cup, but we weren't able to beat them in any of our other matches this season. So that maybe benefited a little bit because it wasn't the 100% strong lineup that Klopp tends to field out. There were a few youngsters in that side, so maybe that helped us a little bit there. But I do think that that's a really good point, in that Chelsea definitely seemed to put an emphasis on this that other teams maybe, and wrongfully so, didn't put an emphasis on trying to win this season. You know, even Pep, you know, I kind of felt like didn't put his full effort behind trying to win this one this year.
Yeah, I think with, you know, post-lockdown, definitely his sights are on that Champions League, that elusive one, which I think sometimes people wrongly say he's not 1-1 without Messi. I think, you know, the Champions League is definitely a very tricky affair. But let's focus then on the Premier League, you know, post-lockdown.
Yeah.
I've looked at some of the data, number crunching, and, you know, you've already kind of stated here that defensively the side haven't been great. It's been mixed, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. And 15 goals let in since lockdown, but an XG conceded of only 10. So quite a big underperformance there of 5 goals. But mid-table for big chances conceded, only 50 shots in the box in the final 8 games, which is actually a stat only bettered by Wolves. So a real mixture there, you know, fantastic only high-quality shots allowed in the box there, but then quite big chances. What do you think is the reason for this intermittent defensive performances?
I would put it down to 2 things. One is we really haven't had a ton of consistency in our defensive lineup. So when you go from having a back 4 to having a back 3 to changing the center back pairings or changing the pairing of back 3, which has happened a couple of times, that doesn't lead to a lot of success. I mean, we look at some of the best Premier League sides or the best defensive sides or cores. They tend to be very consistent. It's almost like a set and forget it type of lineup in that regard. And that hasn't been really Frank's style. He really has been kind of rotating, whether it's Christensen in for Rudiger, or, you know, thankfully it seems like we've settled on the fact that Zuma is our best center back, and we're leveraging him and using him best visibility. We're finding a little bit of that partnership between Reece James and Azpilicueta on the right-hand side. And you're seeing a little bit of something forming maybe between, you know, Alonso on the, you know, if we kind of doing a 3-back and then a midfield 4, Alonso and then Rudiger. But you know, there hasn't been a great level of consistency. You know, I think that's why you look and you see these rumors about Chelsea looking to go for a center back in the market, because it clearly is an area of opportunity, maybe for a left back. There are areas within our defense that are not as solid as they could be. And then there's the other fact that Kepa has not really had a very strong season, definitely has regressed from a year-over-year kind of performance perspective, and, you know, has found himself, you know, on the bench with Willie being the person who's, you know, in goal now. And when you think about a 30-year-old backup keeper from Man City that was really signed to, you know, go for a cup run, to now be the person who we're looking to start in the Premier League and to carry us through this FA Cup final. And my guess would also be probably start versus Bayern Munich. That's, you know, that'd be great for him. It'd be great for him to win another FA Cup.
Yeah, I think we'll get on to the keeper situation at the moment, but you've mentioned the rotation there. Now, sometimes, were you a little bit frustrated with Frank that it was over pragmatism, it was over capitalizing on events, or was it just because there's not been that consistency there and he's still trying to find who are the best partnerships at the back?
I think it's the fact that the performance has been so inconsistent from your starter that he goes and rotates, and then the starter has 1 or 2 good games, but then struggles. You know, I think both Christensen and Rudiger at points of the season have looked to be a dependable center back partner to someone like Kurt Zuma. But what ends up happening is they go through a game and they struggle, and then Frank will look to rotate. And, you know, I think the other factor too, and we haven't talked about him much, is that, you know, Jorginho, when he is in the midfield versus someone like N'Golo Kante, who has struggled to be healthy in the post-restart era, there's a marked difference for what N'Golo Kante brings to helping a defense stay organized, to being able to cover, to being able to get back and support, that someone like Jorginho, if you're asking him to be a true defensive mid, that is not what plays to his skill sets. He's not as quick. He is not as athletic as a N'Golo Kante. And just in some of the, you know, tactical fouling or things of that nature that N'Golo Kante does brilliantly well and somehow is still known as one of the nicest guys in football, even though if you watch him really closely, he is not that nice on the pitch. You know, Jorginho, you know, a couple of times has been caught out and, you know, really needs to go in, make the tactical foul, pick up the yellow for the team. I think the Liverpool match was a great example of that. You know, just if he sticks a boot out or kind of pulls someone back and prevents maybe someone from basically having a free run on goal. Just some of those things, I think, that don't make it easier for the defense too. I think the defense looks at N'Golo Kanté as a little bit of a security blanket, and the blanket has gone missing.
Yeah, it has been a shame to see Kanté, you know, struggling with these injuries, because he is damn good. He's world class. And I think you have hit a point there that probably if he had been consistently healthy, there wouldn't have been as many problems at Chelsea. But let's move on to, you know, the aforementioned keeper situation with Kepa. He's keeper and manager. We do have to remember that from the Carabao. So it's been a big loss there in terms of him letting the side down in many ways, because if you look at the XG data, he is let in 12.9 more goals than he should have. That it's not really good enough for a Premier League keeper. Do you think, though, that Caballero coming in to the final and maybe to the Champions League as well will sort these problems out?
I think it will be a little bit of a net positive, but he is not a starting Premier League goalkeeper at this point in his career. Like, I think that would be something that even he, if we brought this conversation to him, would say, yeah, it's great that I'm getting this start. But if you look at the people who are starting and kind of the benchmark for what a really good to great Premier League goalkeeper is, you know, he is not in the top 10 to 15 in the league right now. And Kepa is much further down that list at the moment. I think what Caballero brings is a little bit more awareness. You know, he's a little taller, which is helpful. I think if you look at the fact that, unfortunately, there have just been a couple of these balls that, you know, I'm not going to put on Kepa not being in the right position. I think there are times that that's been the case. He's not good at coming to clear out crosses, but we knew that about him when he was coming. I mean, we knew that it was going to be a bit of an opportunity for him, and he definitely proved that that is not a skill set that he has. But there's just been times where he's an inch or two away, and if you have a standard height goalkeeper, not someone who is 6'1", but maybe who is 6'3", 6'4", they're getting their fingers to that, and it's going to be stopped. I mean, even in this last match of the season against Wolves, you know, the Caballero had to come up and make one good save, and that was enough to make sure that we didn't have any issue or problem. So he is prone to, you know, one lapse of judgment during games. So I feel like that's contractually obligated somewhere. It's in the fine print. We just didn't negotiate that out. So there definitely will be that one moment. But what I will say is that when you also look at the players we've been able to have in the side, Kurt Zuma does much better aerially. When we think about the, you know, Pulisic actually is really good, you know, with kind of knocking balls away. Giroud is great. So we have some height in the side that's able to compensate a little bit too for maybe the keeper not coming out to claim the way. So he at least is a little bit more active in that regard. Kepa, just from a height perspective, isn't going to be able to come out and compete against some of the taller players there. So I think that has me feeling a little bit more confident, because when we look at where we struggled this season, set pieces have basically been as good as giving away a penalty to most teams from in terms of handing them a goal. And so the fact that we have a little bit of height in there now, that we're leveraging, that we have a keeper who's going to come out and at least try to claim or punch away, that gives me much more confidence heading into this match.
This match will also be the battle of the second goalkeepers, because obviously it's Caballero versus Martinez. Who do you think out of those two is the better of the second goalkeepers?
Martinez should be starting for a Premier League team. He's probably one of the best backups in the Premier League by far. When you just look at how confident and composed he is, that is, you know, it's almost like in American football where you have a backup quarterback, right? You never want to have to use the backup quarterback. But when you have to, it's always nice when they play at least for a stretch, they can play at the level or somewhere in the realm of the level of this starter. And that's what you guys have gotten out of Martinez. I popped him into my fantasy Premier League team at the end of the season here and got a few extra points from him. So that was a nice boon. But ultimately, yeah, you guys have the better goalkeeper on the day. So I'm sure he will pop up with some save that is going to just annoy the crap out of me.
Well, let's move it then on to the attack of Chelsea, because again, it's something that has been a little bit mixed this season. Tammy Abraham was on fire before, I'd say, about January time, and then he looks to have eased off a little bit. But I would say since the restart. Chelsea have actually looked improved in attack. They're the side with the second highest XG, shots in the box and big chances created. So, that you know, they're about second there. And obviously with the points actually accrued, they were fourth. So what do you think has happened there with the team? Again, an inconsistency, but also there's been a continual underperformance on XG. Mm-hmm. Where have those problems come from?
I mean, I think a lot of it has come down to just it's a clinical thing. And so when you think about the fact that we've signed Timo Werner for next season and we're also going strong for Havertz, this is the reason. You know, we have struggled to break down teams that are going to be willing to play a more defensive structure with us, where we've excelled. You know, you think about the Man City game when we kind of caught some balls on the run and were able to just kind of have a free pass, almost a goal. Those are the games where we're starting to excel on teams that are willing to play the whole pitch with us. When someone is willing to give us a little bit more of a look like Burnley and try to lock down with two real strong defensive lines, we just don't have some of the creativity to work through that at the moment. I think what we have seen, though, and the exciting things would be Olivier Giroud and Christian Pulisic are the two most exciting parts of that Chelsea attack right now. And, you know, look, Giroud takes a lot of shots and he doesn't make a lot of them, but when he converts them, they are a thing of beauty. And Pulisic, I think, is getting close to about 3.5 shot creating actions per game. And so he is starting to rise up that table too, and being one of the most important parts of Chelsea's attack, and really a struggle for individual defenders to deal with. And if I were going to put money on anything crazy happening that would just infuriate Arsenal fans and make Chelsea fans as giddy as possible, it's probably David Luiz causing a penalty because he can't slow down Christian Pulisic enough. Is probably the crazy moment that ends up happening that I would take the light in, and I know would hurt your soul.
It would indeed. Now, you know, my feelings, you know, I've discussed this with Robbie Lyle from AFTV. I don't know why Luiz is starting for us at the moment, but that is a big, big nightmarish worry that you have opened out there. Now, let's move on to the psychology of the team, because Arsenal's last FA Cup final loss was all the way back in 2001. But Chelsea's last final loss was 2017 to Arsenal. However, Europa League last season, Chelsea absolutely dominated Arsenal and caused quite a lot of embarrassment. So what do you think is going to loom in the memories of Chelsea's consciousness? And will they be focusing as well on their better Premier League season? What's going to be the main motivator in terms of psychology?
I think there's going to be a desire for some people who are leaving the club. You know, we think about Pedro, who is you know, going to be heading to Serie A in Roma, and this is his last match here for Chelsea. That's going to be something to hang in the head. You're going to see William potentially is this last game with Chelsea. He's going to want to go out in a bang. You look at how he's performed over the restart, and he's been in exceptional form, really outside of missing this last match. And then you have a bunch of young players who have grown up in the culture of Chelsea, the Mason Mount, the Reece James, the Tammy Abraham, the Fakao Tomori, people who know what it means to win at all levels of football. And you have a manager who has won this competition before multiple times and who is really going to want to bring a trophy home. And I think all of that is going to coalesce into a real hunger and desire to bring this one home for the supporters. And so I think the mentality is going to be pretty strong. And I think that's going to come from the top. It's going to come from Frank. And there's enough people on this side who have either won it at the youth level or have won at the adult level of the game or have won this previously. Think about someone like Cesar Azpilicueta as the team captain who knows what it means to win. There's enough mentality here, enough winning mentality to go out and take this on the day.
Yeah, it is true that Chelsea are very rich in that winning mentality that maybe Arsenal do lack a little bit. You know, that it has been something that has been commented previously that when it gets to the final stage, when the you know, rough gets going and everything, Arsenal get going. They just seem to vacate in these finals. But let's move on to the day. As we said, it's only a few hours away now. It is tomorrow, and we're looking forward to it all. I think that's the fun of the FA Cup final day. Everybody, probably across the country, is looking forward to this one. Now, do you have a predicted lineup? Because we haven't got the team news just yet in terms of injuries. We're a little bit early on that. But what do you think is going to happen with Lampard's selection?
I think he's going to keep with what's worked for him, even though there's been this topsy-turvy when we play with a back three. After every other match, we tend to lose. And so there's not a good record of using the back three and then the next result being super positive. But you know, I think there's also, when we have the back three, there's enough players who played in the Conte system in this side who have a good muscle memory about what that means. So I do think, so to, if we go from the back, Caballero will start. It will not be Kepa. I think we'll see the back three of Azpilicueta, Rudiger and Kurt Zuma, and Kurt probably playing in that central role. Then you go up, you have got a midfield four, and I'm going to imagine that it's probably going to be, and Reece James will be on the right with partnered with Azpilicueta. You're going to have Alonso on the left partnered with Rudiger, and then you'll have a midfield two. My guess would be, if he's healthy enough, N'Golo Kante will play with Kovacic, and then your front three ends up becoming a combination of Giroud, Pulisic, and I'm going to guess Mason Mount gets the start. I mean, William was trying to be healthy for the last match, wasn't able to make match fitness. I think you will miss, or we will miss, some of his ability off the ball and kind of ability to you know, recycle play effectively. But you know, Mason has been such a critical part of this side all season that I would have a really hard time seeing a lineup that doesn't have his name in it. It would just, you know, kind of shock me, especially, you know, with as much on the stake in this match. And then, you know, from a substitutes appearance, if I think about like who might end up coming in during the course of the match, I mean, you have someone like Ross Barkley, who has been someone who's played a big part in this FA Cup run. He probably ends up coming in. You see Tammy come in at some point. If he's available, William, you know, just so that you kind of can. Callum. You know, Callum has been able to kind of start and come back with some assists too. So, I mean, there's definitely some ability to bring in some high impact players too, depending upon how the game, you know, runs its course.
Do you think as well that you mentioned there that some of these players will be leaving or probably leaving Chelsea? Will Lampard have that emotional connection when he, you know, chooses players that might come and on and off the pitch, or is it going to be a bit like Klopp with you know what I'm mentioning here, with Klopp, Lallana, and he's sat on the bench there looking happy but won't actually play any sort of part?
Well, Pedro already got his kind of farewell opportunity versus Wolves. I think it was really classy of Lamps to make sure that got taken care of. I think Willian is the only one who would be the concern. I think most of the others have had their chance to get their day out in the sun. And William will feature if healthy at some point this match. So I'm not terribly concerned. I think if there's an opportunity to give a few minutes at the end, if the score has been run up significantly, which I don't expect to happen, then sure. But I think Frank is just going to want to focus on winning. And I think what will probably happen is what we've seen when the game is close, unless something is going kind of rightfully wrong, that he will probably not make substitutes until late 60s, early 70s at the earliest. I think he's going to want to try to come in with a strategy and not try to mess with it too much. He tends to want to allow things to run its course and let the team on the pitch figure it out versus trying to kind of quickly sub unless something is completely off.
So let's talk tactics then. You know, you're mentioning what the team is going to do on the pitch. Are you a little bit worried about Arsenal sitting deep? Because that seems to have been the trend when they played, you know, more expansive teams against Man City, against Liverpool. They managed somehow to get clean sheets against Wolves, Liverpool and Man City. Obviously mixed in there is two Premier League fixtures. But is it going to be about that? Is it going to be worry about breaking Arsenal down? And also, do you think Chelsea's slightly superior defense will see them out, though, in this match.
I don't know if I would call them slightly superior. I think it's like a seesaw, and on the day, one of our defenses may or may not be better than the other, but it is a constantly changing tides for that one. I would say that tactically, I think both sides, it's going to get into that weird start of the match where there's going to be some intensity, but both sides are going to try to figure out like what the exact tactics are of, you know, Arteta's going to be having his guys kind of probe to figure out where the weak spots are. I think this game will actually be, if Arsenal win, it's through the midfield. If Chelsea win, we won on the flanks. I don't think we have seen Chelsea put in really dominant midfield performances, especially when you look at the fact that Jorginho and Kovacic have not had the best kind of performance. If Conte's there, it's a completely different story. But where we've been excelling at the later part of the season here has been the efforts of Pulisic or James or Azpilicueta or Alonso on the wings to really push the ball forward to get our players like Giroud into a spot to be able to receive and knock in a goal or put Mason in a good position. And so if we're doing our job right, I think Chelsea will win on the wings. I think if Arsenal are doing their job right, they're going to find a way to get Lacazette or Aubameyang slicing through our midfield and really putting our defenders in a bad situation. Where if we're too pressed forward, that they'll pounce, they'll drive forward, they'll find themselves with a very, very clear opportunity on goal.
Yeah, the reason why I said I think Chelsea's defence is slightly superior because Arsenal have the second worst XG post-lockdown, only worse than the only team worse are actually Norwich. So that's something that really worries me. But we mentioned him earlier, the D word, Didier Drogba. He has the most goals in FA Cup finals with four goals scored in four different finals. So who's going to be this year's fearsome Drogba for Arsenal, if there is any, in the Chelsea team?
I think it's Christian Pulisic. And I know that it's as the American Chelsea supporter, we've tried very much to not over-talk about him. But I think what has happened over the last 6, 7, 8 matches here, post-lockdown, post-restart, is everyone has seen like, oh my gosh, this guy can actually play. He can shred through some defenses. I think he still has a lot to do in terms of working on some of the ball retention pieces. He gets dispossessed quite frequently. It's also because he's running into some really narrow channels and taking some chances that frankly have worked out and helped us win games. So I'm not overly concerned about it. I think he's going to frustrate defenders, not just in this match, but next season. And I'm delighted by that. He is going to cause problems for the back line. And I think what he also does is he forces more than one player to commit because he can't be handled one-on-one. And so anytime you have a player on your side that's really going to force defenders, you know, potentially pull someone else out of position, that opens space for Giroud, that opens space for Mount, that opens space for someone to make a run in from the midfield. Maybe we get a sneaky N'Golo Kanté goal. Those are always good. Those are always good. Worth just for his celebration alone where he doesn't know what to do would be fantastic. So I think Christian Pulisic, if there's one person who's the danger man in this game, as much as I'd love to say Giroud and that he's going to cause nightmares and haunt Arsenal supporters forever for letting him walk away and give you another post-Europa thank you Arsenal moment with the trophy in hand, I do think it's Christian who's the one I'd be looking at for causing all sorts of problems.
Yeah, I love watching Pulisic play. I liked watching him at Dortmund, but he really has grown in the last few games and he's proving why Chelsea kind of spent kind of big on him. I don't know if it's time to call him Hazard Light yet. I think as well, it's unfair to compare players to other players. They should just be Pulisic is fantastic by himself. But there is that air to him that he can destroy defences. He just needs to grow a little bit more, like you said there. Next season, he's going to be a scary, scary prospect. Now, moving on to the actual scoreline, how confident are you of the win? And what do you think is actually going to be the scoreline?
Both sides will score. I think that both of these sides have proved an ability to score. And, you know, just I hope it's not as crazy as your match versus Watford. That was a very fun way to end the season. My guess is it's probably one of the more conservative. The, you know, if Chelsea win, and I'm hoping they do, and my fingers are crossed that they do, I think it's a like a 2-1 victory where you get one goal early, or Arsenal gets a goal early, you get the goal back at some point, and then you kind of clinch one in the last 20 minutes to lock things down. But I think it's going to be end to end. I think it's going to be a really exciting match, and I think it's just going to be a great advertisement for the job the FA and the Premier League have done in terms of getting football back into a place where it was safe for players to do so, in a way that, you know, they've been able to continue their careers without concern for kind of personal injury or personal harm, and have given all of us a little bit of enjoyment back as we've kind of had to work through this period of trying to adjust. And so, I think that is, at the end of the day, even if the result doesn't go our way, I think I'm happy we got an FA Cup final this year when there were points of the year where I didn't think it was going to happen. So
it sounds very reminiscent of my sentiments as well. Happy for an FA Cup after the season that we've had. In terms of that final score, what's really funny is I mentioned that I've already chatted to Robbie Lyle from AFTV. He said exactly the same scoreline, but reversed, obviously, for Arsenal. He said Aubameyang and Lacazette both to score. Who are you touting to get on the scoreline?
My thought is it probably is a Giroud Pulisic 2. And then I would say, gosh, for Arsenal, I don't know. I just you can't stop Aubameyang from scoring. The dude just has it in his DNA and really needs to be locked down to a long-term contract. You guys need to figure that out for him, because he's just an absolute beast and needs more supporting cast members around him, because that would also be scary for me. So maybe don't do that. Don't advise anyone to do that. That's a bad idea.
Take that back. Take it back. Yeah. In terms of it, so you're not going to give Kante a shout at all then, you know, with one of his cheeky goals that he doesn't know what to do.
I would love it. I'd love another Mason Mount free kick goal. There's a lot of things I think could happen. I'm going to go with the players who've been hot. I mean, you think that, you know, Olivier Giroud, 7 goals in 8 games, you know, the oldest player in the Premier League, I think at 33 to do that after Jamie Vardy at 32. So, you know, he is in fine form. And then Pulisic is just finding his way to dangerous areas. And if Pulisic doesn't score, he probably will have worked himself into a position to earn a penalty from David Luiz and basically get the assist for one. So that would just be the perfect type of chaos that exists between these two teams down without some bit of controversy, whether it's VAR, whether it's a bad officiating decision. There's going to be something that's going to just, you know, have a bit of a bitter taste in all our mouths that it didn't go without any incident.
That seems very Arsenal Chelsea games. It's always been like that through our histories. Now, we're going to move on to the final question here. It hurts me to say it. And, what will you do if you win? I don't want to say that, but what will you be doing to celebrate? Will you be with fellow people from the podcast, or are you just going to be with friends and family?
Well, so we'll definitely, with our podcast group, we've definitely done some Zoom calls or some Skype calls to be able to interact with other individuals. We have not progressed to the period where there's a lot of outdoor social gatherings again yet here stateside, or if they are, they're not necessarily entirely legal or recommended. So yeah, I think we will stick to a digital celebration to toast to cheers and to kind of cap off what has been a wonderful season. But if we don't win, I will still be extremely happy with the progress we made this season and the blueprint for what's coming next, because I don't know, Frank Lampard's Chelsea manager. That's just so cool. And, you know, I think that actually the same holds true for Arsenal. I mean, obviously this would help with Europa qualification. And I think, you know, Arsenal have a little bit more on the line than Chelsea do, but I think I've seen Arteta do a couple things at the end of the season here that if he gets backed, puts Arsenal in a really dangerous position next season to be challenging for top four and to be making things difficult for the Liverpool, City, and Chelsea's of the world. So I don't know. I think the future is actually bright for both of these teams. And when you look at the Lily Whites, the future maybe is not as bright for them. So at least some of London is shining in this moment.
Yeah, the good parts of London, the bits that should be shining. And I think as well, the youth project at both clubs is very, very exciting as well. We both got
absolutely
lots of great players coming through. But what has been fantastic as well today is your time, Dan. It's been great fun talking to you. And I hope that we'll be chatting again in the near future about Chelsea and the 2021 season. And I just wish for a good final, an entertaining one at that.
Absolutely. Well, again, as a pleasure as always. And it's crazy that we'll have a Premier League season again in like a month and a half. So we should enjoy the break while we have it.
The wait's still too long. A month and a half with no football.